At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Psychovertical podcast. I'm your host, Andy Kirkpatrick. It's Friday. What day is it? Friday afternoon, and it's podcast time. I have to do a podcast. I've had a call this week. Like someone came round, some play date for my son, and he was like a little snotty baby, and then my son got a cold, so he was like snotty, and then I got snotty, so I've not had any kind of illness for a very long time, so it was so yes I've been a bit ill this week, so apologies if I sound a bit if I start sneezing or whatever, but I feel like I'm through the worst of it now, so I was thinking what to do for this podcast. Something that's been on my mind this week is, because I'm on tour like starting, I think it's like 20th of this month, like touring around the UK and in theatres and stuff. So like one thing I'm conscious of is it's not a good time to be going on tour, and because I think a lot of people just don't want to go outside, like they don't want to go out to the theatres, or they don't even want to go and see James Bond. So numbers are probably going to be much lower than usual. Like the last few tours I've done, I was always like selling out nearly all the kind of venues, like theatres and things. So you get like, you know, 300 or 400 people coming to, you know, to like a, you know, medium sized like theatre. But I'm kind of dreading a little bit this tour, because I don't know if my ego can take it if there's nobody there. But I'm sure there'll always be people there. But it was anyway. So it's quite a bit of an unknown really. And because I'm not on social media anymore, that kind of compounds it. Like I had a message from someone who was like, "Oh, I live in Leeds, and I've just now seen you on tour and stuff, coming to Leeds." And it's kind of like, "Oh God!" Like if I had social media. So Vanessa was like, "Come on, you need to start on social media again." I'm like, I can't go back to social media now. Like I've. You know, I don't actually believe, you know, when someone says, you know, like I don't eat meat or I don't drink, or like you often, like, you know, if you don't eat meat, you can still eat meat, or you can still have a drink if you want to. Like you should never be, you know, never say never, but you should never be absolute. Like I'm 100% never absolute about anything. That's my motto in life. So Like, I should be able to go back on social media. Like, it shouldn't be like, this is my line in the sand, I'm not going back to social media. I was saying to Vanessa, like, even if she went back to social media, it took, you know, it took a long time to get like 15,000 followers or whatever. Like, it took a lot of effort to get all those followers. Although, weirdly, like, all my followers on all these things, like Instagram and everything else, they all basically went to about 15,000 and then just stayed there and never went up or never went down. So it's kind of weird. I think that was all these like sex bots and all this kind of fake accounts that have just filled it all up, really. So I was like, if you don't have that conversation, like, look, I've come off social media because it's a lot better for my mental health. Because literally the second I go back on social media, I'm just like, it brings me down and depresses me and something. But I think Vanessa's just thinking, like, we just need to make some, you know, money and stuff. So it's a bit like the mafia, you know, the kind of, you know, they just kind of get you and stuff, intimidate you. So I did actually react. The thing about Facebook, like on a lot of things like Twitter and Instagram, I think after a certain time they've gone, you can't get them back. But I think Facebook, it's just the nature of Facebook. It's just there. It's like shooting up heroin or something. It's just there, like, oh, go on, have a little bit, you know, just for old time's sake or something. So anyway, so I reactivated it and it came, wing, and there it was back again. But then I realized, I had like a Facebook page, which is different to a Facebook account, and that one had gone. So I was like, "Oh fuck it, it's not even worth doing it." So I deleted again. And but even just switching on for those few seconds, you saw all these like messages from people on Facebook, and you were just like, "I just don't even want to look at those messages because they're going to be either someone's going to be pissed off or irate or whatever, or they're going to be." Something else. So I just got rid of it again. But you feel when you're on tour, like I have like speakers from the edge of the people who like organise tours for people like me and Kenton Cool and Chris Bonington and all these kind of people. And what's kind of weird was I was a person who set up speakers from the edge, and then eventually I ended up like selling my half of the company to somebody else, and anyway, so it's kind of weird. If you ever get around to finishing my podcast about my history of work and anything, I might have any insights into making a living as a climber, I'll include that in there. But anyway, Dion used to be the marketing, do all the marketing from Speakers from the Edge. But anyway, Dion now owns Speakers from the Edge. But it's, you know, really, it's really tough at the moment, you know, to be running that kind of, like, an events business is not very easy. So he just had Kenton Cool was on tour, Speaks on the Edge. So anyway, but apart from like your ego of thinking, you know, like I might turn up and there'll be like 100 people there or something. Hopefully it's 100 people. It's like also, well, for him, it's his business. Like for me, I could go on tour and not make any money whatsoever, and I might lose money from, I don't stay in hotels. I stay in like the cheapest Airbnb I can find, so my overheads are very low. So that's very important if you're ever going to try and make a living out of something like a business, is try and don't imagine yourself as being successful, as in that means I can stay in like 5-star hotels and, you know, employ someone to drive me around and you know, and all that kind of stuff. It's very important to always minimize all your expenditures. So, but anyway, I feel you feel like me going off social media is just making his job like a lot worse. Like if you've got 15,000 people and you say, oh, look at this, I'm going on tour, then, you know, that's kind of helpful. But I don't anymore. So anyway, so I was thinking, I should try and like, what's the alternative? I guess you could put like an advert on UK Climbing, but they don't like me anymore. So they wouldn't do anything with me. So for some reason, you know, like magazines, like no one reads magazines anymore. They're just, I don't think people ever really read many people read magazines anyway. I remember when I was working in shops, you'd always get this like big stack of magazines and you would sell, you know, 20 of them, and then the rest of them would just, you'd pull the covers off them and post the covers back to get a refund, then you just throw the rest in the skip. And someone told me that something like 70% of all magazines in W.H. Smith's just go in the skip, then no one buys them. And I think magazines, the magazine industry and advertising is one of the great scams that no one ever really fully understood, in that it was never anything, it was never to do with the consumer buying the magazine. It was to do with leveraging the number of consumers, number of readers you had, in order to leverage the highest amount of advertising. So, you know, like in a climbing magazine, a full page advert would cost you like £1,500 or something, or more if it was like the back cover or whatever. But if you're looking at something like Vogue or something, you know, or like high end magazines, you're talking, you know, huge amounts of money. So no one is reading magazines. I think once advertisers realize that actually no one is actually reading this magazine anymore, they're just going on the internet, we'll just advertise on the internet instead. It wasn't like, oh, we'll have less adverts in the magazine, but we'll just still be making shitloads of money because we have all these people who buy the magazine. Like that didn't work, because that's not how it works. So like, that's why a magazine that says it's not going to have any advertising generally doesn't last very long, because you just can't, it just, the model doesn't work. Like a magazine should cost the same as a book, you know, it should cost like 15 quid, 20 quid, and then it would like, you know, like Alpinist magazine has adverts in it, and I think Alpinist magazine just barely scrapes by. And it's got, like, Alpinist has got increasingly walkified, a bit like all the magazines. I think they're all on the way to, you know, they're all eventually gonna die, because the people who buy magazines are generally the people who don't like kind of walkification of the media that they consume, and the people who like that kind of thing don't buy magazines. So it's it's a lose-lose for everybody. So like, if magazines are out, social media's out, it's like, what am I gonna do? Like, I know podcasts, maybe I need to try and get on some other people's podcasts. And so I'm gonna do a podcast with I'm gonna get some people on this podcast, because then I can just piggyback any kind of, you know, something on the back of their fame and good looks and everything else. So Pete Whittaker's also going on tour. So I thought I'd talk to Pete Whittaker about, you know, making a living speaking and stuff like that, because Pete's kind of not new to it, but he's like at the beginning of that kind of, you know, making a living out of talking about his adventures and stuff. So anyway, so I was meant to do that today, but because I was poorly, I didn't do it. So then I was like, I've just been on this podcast, the Unconventional Soldier podcast, which will be kind of interesting, I think. It's a podcast, it's like a military, basically, podcast, but it's very, I found it because there was something about clothing in the Falkland Island, in the war in the Falklands or something, and I ended up coming across this podcast, and it had a very good podcast about this guy who was fighting in the Falklands War, and it was all to do with all kind of stuff. Anyway, so I ended up emailing them and saying how, you know, it's like a really good podcast, really interesting. It's very like nerdy. It gets really into lots of nerdy kind of stuff. Anyway, but they end up replying, because I have this thing about, I always like to email people and say you're doing a good job, or, you know, blah blah blah. Because I think a lot of people don't bother. They just kind of, there's so much media out there, we're consuming so much free content, we just imagine it's just there for free. Like no one is, you know, people just fire out their asses or something. But, you know, the quality of a lot of what people are producing, this is an exception, is amazing. You know, people like the BBC would be, you know, would have like producer and engineer and researcher and blah blah, you know, all these people fully funded producing something probably half as good as a lot of podcasts you hear. So Anyway, so I emailed these guys and I was saying, oh, this, I really like your podcast and good luck with it and all that kind of stuff. And it's like a lot of these things, it's like the stuff on the periphery of the genre of podcasting is always the most interesting. The stuff that is never going to appear at the top of your, you know, of your, you know, what you should be listening to. Like, generally all that's just going to be shit. It's all the stuff that's kind of the super niche stuff. Like, you'll find some Dungeons & Dragons kind of related podcast and there'll be an interview with somebody and it'll be really interesting. Like, I've just been listening to this Lex Friedman podcast and I just listened to this one, I can't remember his name now, American judo, you know, judo silver medalist. And that was like, I guess Lex Friedman is becoming more mainstream podcaster now. Like, he's incredibly prolific in his podcasting, but that was, you know, sometimes you listen to a podcast and it just stays with you for ages and you're always like, oh yeah, I was listening to this podcast. Every other conversation I have is like, oh yeah, I was listening to this podcast and just kind of blah, 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 blah. And, you know, but poor old Vanessa just kind of like, she doesn't listen to podcasts. She just, you know, her eyes just glaze over. Like, when I start saying, I was listening to this podcast. Unfortunately, recently, maybe I covered this on another on my last podcast, but Vanessa started reading the newspaper. She basically buys, she's just this thing like, I want to start reading the newspaper. So she buys this, the Sunday newspaper, which I shouldn't have to buy the Guardian. Anyway, should not. Anyway, she buys, they're all as bad as each other. I've realized, like, it's very hard to find. There's all the newspapers as bad as each other in my mind. I could be wrong, but they're all the language they use and the way they say it, the way they frame things. Like, it's very, I think it's always very, anyway, it's just not, it doesn't lend itself to actually understanding anything, I don't think. Anyway, so she started reading the newspaper, and it takes her about like 4 or 5 days to seem to get anywhere. By the time she's finished the Sunday newspaper, it's Sunday again, ready for the next one. And that's because she's like busy, got a baby and everything else. But, you know, she was like, it's so terrible, these Haitian refugees who are being sent back to you know, Haiti and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, you live in fucking west of Ireland, who gives a fuck about fucking Haitian refugees? I mean, you've just started reading the newspaper and already it's bringing you down and like filling your mind full of shit that it's got nothing to do with you or whatever. Which is a very not very modern way of looking at this kind of stuff. But someone told me that that's kind of very Russian. You know, what's the podcast? The Red Scare podcast. But they, you know, their thing was in Russia, instead of Black Lives Matter, it was like No Lives Matter. And I think maybe I've kind of got that No Lives Matter. And I think I've kind of taken that on a little bit, because I think it's just not healthy to be concerned about these things that are not out of your control. So I'm always talking about podcasts and always, like, you know, so it's like, it's a very, it's kind of central to my life. But anyway, for these guys in this podcast, they were like, one of them came to see me when I was speaking sometime in Hull, at the theatre in Hull. So that's kind of, it's kind of weird, really. And we ended up having a bit of a chat, and I was like, about this, there's some kind of crossover between what they were talking about. A lot of it was about like small groups of soldiers who were like in a remote places, and it's like some observing the enemy or whatever. And I was saying about like the crossover between climbing and you know, being self-sufficient and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, so they end up having me on the podcast. So that was, but I have this thing at the moment. I think because I live a very isolated life, they're just me, Vanessa, and this baby, and there's occasionally like some other random family member turns up, or we go and visit somebody or something. But I live in a fairly remote place, and it's fairly isolated from anybody. So I don't actually get to talk to that many people. I think I've maybe, like a lot of people, have ended a bit like this. I've become a bit antisocial, as in no lives matter. So I find that when I suddenly start having conversation with somebody, like, I can't stuff myself. Like, all these words start coming out, and I can't modify them. I can't, like, you know, restrict them and focus them and, like, you know, turn the tap off, turn the tap on. And often I'll start having a conversation with somebody, like my neighbor the other day. Older lady, and she was like coming out of her driveway or something, and I was pushing Nora in the pram, and she was like, oh, how are you doing? And it's like, oh, like, look at the baby, you know, blah, blah, blah. And you start having the normal non-conversations that we all have, which is like, oh, the weather's nice. And actually, I had a great moment the other day. I was like climbing up this hill over here near us, Diamond Hill, which is like a big hill, mountain. It's like a mini mountain, but you can go up it in about an hour and a bit from the car park. It's probably like going up Triffin or something. So you can get up it. So we basically drive there with Noah, so he's asleep in the car, and you get him in the backpack, and you can get to the top of the mountain before he has to have his food. And then we have like a little plastic chair, and we sit on top of the mountain, and then he has his food. And then by the time he's finished his food, we can get back down to the bottom of the mountain to the car before he falls asleep. Then you put him in the car, and then he has a sleep on the way home again. So it's very, it's the timing is very important. Like, you don't want to fall asleep walking down the mountain or whatever. Anyway, so I was walking down the mountain, and there was these like three French women, like young girls, who had been up this mountain. It's like very popular, very touristy mountain. And they were like, do you think it will rain? And I was like, oh, like, see that mountain over there? See that mountain in the distance? Oh, yes, we can see the mountain. See that mountain over there? If you can see the mountain, it's going to rain. And if you can't see the mountain, it's raining. And they're like, oh, sacre bleu. Anyway, so but I've been dying to use that stupid line for ages. And anyway, Vanessa was like rolling her eyes. She was like, oh, those poor Haitians. So anyway, we do not understand what you're saying. So I have this thing where I start just kind of losing the run of myself, and just so I think I'm kind of, maybe I'm just starved of any kind of adult conversation with Vanessa. Because when what she wants to talk about, I don't want to talk about it, and then what I want to talk about, she doesn't want to talk about. Maybe that's the sign up. Maybe that's the crux. That's the what's it called? That would be the perfect relationship. Is like two people who don't really want to have got nothing to say to each other, or maybe that's not right. Anyway, so you definitely don't want to get so all you ever talk about is your kids. Like that's not good. You know, that's not a good thing. So we do talk about other things. I can't think what those things are. She's like very she's not very, like, because I've been poorly. I was in bed for 2 days because I didn't want to. Because I'm going on tour, I don't want to turn something that's not very like a cold or something into something else if I'm going on tour. Like, I start getting really paranoid about that kind of stuff. So, but Vanessa's like, she's got no sympathy whatsoever because she never gets ill. Like, I think I had COVID in these early podcasts. When I started doing the podcast, I was like ill for like a month or 2 months or something. Like, always, like, I was basically ill. I think I got COVID in Poland in December 2019 or something, because everyone basically got really ill immediately, and everyone I met got ill afterwards. Like my mom and everybody, Vanessa. So anyway, she's got no sympathy whatsoever. So she's like, what you need to do, like, I'm laid in bed, I'm feeling like I'm gonna die. It's like, what you need to do is go for a swim in the sea. And I'm like, oh, I think actually maybe just wants to kill me, I don't know. Anyway, so yes, I'm talking to this woman. I'm like doing the, like, I really hate chit chat. I think it comes from working in a shop where everyone comes in and it's just this like chit chat, like, oh, how are you doing? And all that kind of stuff. And you get to the point where you realize that people don't even listen. Like, you know, you'd someone come in and they'd say, how are you doing? And I wouldn't reply. And they'd say, good, good. As in, I'd say to them, how are you? But I didn't say it. So anyway, so it's, everything's like on this kind of, it's all, is it formulaic? What was it? Anyway, so I don't like doing thingy. Don't really like doing it. So I ended up, like, it was my next door neighbor is, I think he's on some kind of terrorist. He's like he's kind of an oldish Irish guy, and he is a member of Republican Sinn Féin. So I think he's on some kind of a watch list, because wherever he goes in the world, he always gets like really hassled by immigration and all that kind of stuff. So that's often when he's there, it's always an interesting conversation with him. About him being a terrorist and everything else. He did actually get blown up, but that wasn't his fault. We started having this conversation, and then I think I was talking about, they'd just been to Scotland, and they were saying how like the lockdown stuff in Scotland was like much stricter than in England. And then I started getting on to like how I used to live in Scotland, and I was talking about how much it had changed post the referendum. And that I wrote this article on my blog. It's probably probably an early article when I wrote something controversial, but it was basically about how going to Scotland and feeling this sense of this when it's not anyway, you know, when you have like Catholics and Protestants or whatever. Sectarianism, that you felt this kind of division that wasn't there before when I was living there before. And you had like the people who had voted to stay in the union were almost like they were just kept quiet because they didn't have the moral high ground, where the people who had lost, who wanted independence, they had this kind of moral high ground and this kind of poetic truth to what they wanted and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, so I kind of brought this up in the conversation, and I was saying about, I wrote this article, and loads of people said it was bullshit, you know, it was, that's not true. And I said it was like a one-party state. And this was like, this is a long time ago. Yeah, I had this sense it was like a one-party state, and you saw lots of little signs of it in Scotland. And I think now if someone reread the article, they would say you were like totally right. And also these things that you wrote about were completely borne out in Brexit, you know, which happened a long time afterwards, and also... You can see it. You can see in all over the place this kind of sectarianism that we're seeing, whether it's to do with wearing a mask or not wearing a mask, whether it's to do with, you know, liking Miley Cyrus or whatever. You know, it's everything. You're wrong. Anyway, so we started going down that road a little bit. Which is probably going out of the bounds of like an ordinary. It was more like a normal. It was actually more like a serious conversation. Well, conversation as in I was doing all the talking, and then I went into. I think the last podcast I mentioned this idea I've got about. So I started talking about the that we live in this idea we live in a simulation, and I think the first time I heard the idea that we live in a simulation was some. Documentary, I don't know, it was like a long, long time ago. It was like some BBC documentary about time travel, and it was talking about how would it be possible to time travel. And at the end, it said what we would do because of the processing power of computers and all that kind of stuff is eventually we'll be able to have a computer that can create a completely realistic model of reality. In which everyone in it, all the characters, people, you know, all the non-player characters and all the player characters and all that kind of stuff, would all believe they were real because they'd have all their background and they would have all their, you know, blah blah blah. Anyway, so we would be possible through simulation to be able to go back in time, basically. It wouldn't be real, but you know, you would feel like it was going back in time. Anyway, so I started having this conversation about. Like, oh, this idea we live in a simulation, and straight away, like, her eyes were going crossed. And I was like, well, I think I got this idea that we don't need to create a simulation. We can just create, like, an internal simulation where it's all in our minds. And, like, everybody is, you know, everyone is like, nearly everyone is like plugged into this, nearly everyone is like plugged into this simulation. And it was just like this, like, just like dead silence, this like dead silence, where I didn't really go anywhere. I was like, right then, better get going. Like, oh, it's nice. Well, it starts raining, and then push the buggy away. Like, sometimes you do have a good conversation with somebody. Like, sometimes, like, when I go to the park, I'm like with doing something with Noah, and he's like doing something in the park. Like, he's famous where we live because he can go up all the slides and all that, kind of climb up all the stairs and stuff. And you'll suddenly start having a conversation with somebody, and something will just like click, like, you know, something will just click like that. And it's a bit like, I don't know if you've ever, have you ever met someone like in the of the opposite sex? Could be the same sex, doesn't matter. And you just, there is some chemistry or whatever where you just click and you're like, this person completely gets me. I completely get them. And it's almost not like a sexual, you know, it's almost not like I fancy you, I want to have sex with you kind of thing, which, you know, you have that with everybody, you know, of all genders and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, you're like, it's like beyond like a sexual thing, you know. It's like the person, oh my God, I like this person themselves. I guess that's to do with like friendship, when you meet someone and you just love, you know, you just, maybe just in love with yourself. Maybe it's someone who's just like you or something. But anyway, because maybe it's just easy, you know, if someone sees the world like you do to some degree, it's just easier, and it's more, and you can explore things more because they know what you're talking about, and you can like batter ideas off. Like a few people I've met who I often think very like funny kind of people I respect, who are like, they get on stage and they were, you know, amusing and blah blah blah. Like when I've met people like that, I've hung out with them, in a way it's a little bit exhausting because both of you are both on full power mode all the time. Like I found recently, again, because we live in this like sectarianized world, is that you'll often talk to people who in the past were like that, were very similar, and you'll suddenly drift into one topic and you'll just hit like a dead end. Like you cannot, it's hard to explain, but you just can tell that suddenly like the brakes go on the conversation, and you know, like I would say that I know, like I could talk to anybody about anything. I could talk to someone who is an Antifa or a white supremacist or a Nazi or a whatever. I could, we're all the same basically. I could talk to anybody, someone who, socialist, whatever, you know, I can speak to anybody about anything. I can speak to an Islamist. I can understand, like, I think, you know, I personally, there's a lot, I can't go into it, but, you know, there's aspects. I could talk to someone about Osama bin Laden, and I could talk to them as if someone who had respect for bin Laden and all that kind of stuff. But I could also talk to someone who, you know, had respect for George Bush, and I could talk to, you know, that's the danger of always being able to see something in everything, is that you're a kind of a suspicious character, because really you should just believe in like one thing. Like this is the, like I often joke, Vanessa, when she was a school teacher, she once came back and she said something like, oh, I said to the kids like, oh, Hitler was a very, he was a very interesting man or something. And he was, you know, she basically was saying like Hitler, you know, had a lot of power over people. Like he was a great communicator or something. But just by using the word great, is very dangerous thing to use, because are you saying he was a great man or whatever? So I was always joke that Vanessa said like, oh, Hitler, he's, you know, he's just misunderstood or something. But having the ability to feel comfortable with someone, to have say you want to talk about suicide bombing, you know, you can have a really interesting conversation with someone about the whys and everything else, and what would make someone, you know, be a suicide bomber. And you know, if someone is coming from it, like I once had this conversation with someone about but honor killing, you know, and this person was basically all for it. You know, it was a woman, basically, you know, a woman who was into, was all for honor killing. Now, personally, I'm not into honor killing, but by listening to this woman's explanation about why honor killings happen, was for me was very interesting. But if I had just been like, this person is, you know, I can't, inhuman or something, you know, I'm just gonna turn away, not talk to them. You know, like, what's the benefit of that? So what's my point here? This is the point of what I'm talking about, is that once I start talking, I can't stop talking because I'm not having enough conversations. Ideally, I think me and Vanessa need to start having a book club or something, and just reading a book, and we can talk about the book or something. Anyway, I think what it is, it's nothing to do with Vanessa. It's to do with me, in that I think I'm like, I think there's something wrong. I think there is actually something wrong with me. I did have one of these conversations I had with someone recently where it kind of hit this brick wall. Is I told them that I do have this, I do have like something in place in my brain, which is like a fail-safe that is always like processing all the information that I'm thinking about in order to make sure it's not like toxic, like it's going to kill me or you know, you could very easily see how you could be digesting information that would end up causing you to kill yourself or kill other people or do something crazy or you know, like completely, you know, like blast you out of the life you have or something, you know, where you just suddenly hate society or think society, you know, you end up becoming psychotic or whatever. Like, it'd be very easy in this day and age for that to happen, because you're consuming so much information all at once by so many different sources, where in the past, you know, like reading a newspaper, it takes time. Reading a book, you know, you always fall asleep. So like in the past, it was much harder to have something that really blew your mind, and then for you to question whether that was actually the intention. Was it that was actually true, or was it just trying to blow your mind? So anyway, so I got on this podcast, and we had this conversation on the podcast with this army guys. But I ended up talking for about 3.5 hours. It was very formal. We had all these questions I wanted to ask, you know, and it was all, we had a document, you know, like a document with all the questions they were going to ask me, and I just went on and on and on and on, and before I knew it, it was like we've been talking for 3.5 hours. And then they were like, oh, I think we'll have to do this like a two-part one. And I was just, I emailed him later on. I was like, oh, look, I'm really sorry, like I was probably just talking about, you know, just utter bullshit, basically. Like, because you kind of forget that you're on a podcast. You're just talking, and all this kind of stuff is like coming out of your head, really, all at the same time. So yeah. Like that's one thing I've been worrying about at the moment, because I'm on tour. Like, I'm trying to put my show together, which is a show. It's not just me talking about my holidays. It's like I have to think of it in a way. I've got to think of the beginning and the end, and where it's divided in the middle for a, you know, like a interval, and you know, and all this kind of stuff. And I've been really stressing me out for various reasons. And you know, part, you always think like, oh god, I've got nothing to talk about. Like, basically the showing covers you know, it covers like going to Namibia, Kenya, South Africa, Oman, Saudi Arabia, Alaska, New Zealand, Australia. It's basically going to all these places in this thing. It's supposed to be about going on holiday. And like, how could I think I've got nothing to talk about? Like, it's just this paranoia. Like, I remember when I skied across Greenland, I was like, oh god, I've got nothing to talk about. And then when I started talking about it, before you knew it, I had all these like really, some really fantastic, funny stories and interesting stories about Greenland. And it's the same with going to Alaska, going to Denali. You know, the same thing was like, well, it isn't really anything to talk about. But you as you're telling it, you start realizing there are some really interesting things, things you haven't really thought about. But ultimately, the the problem for me in my mind was, it's got to be funny. I've gone from someone who was just doing a talk about climbing and, you know, going on trips and stuff, to people thinking it was funny. Like, it wasn't meant to be funny. Like, I once had a comedian, Ed Burns, like, come to one of my talks because we'd been, like, climbing together. And afterwards, he was like, oh, yeah, if I give you some advice, it'd be like, when people start laughing, you don't give them any time. You just keep talking over them when they're laughing. And I was like, well, it's not meant to be funny. Like, I'm just trying to get to the end. You know, it's not meant to be like, you know, proper comedian where they like set up the line and then they kind of wait and start talking again. So if it was funny, it wasn't intentionally so. Like as you get better, if you're on tour, you'll get like a certain line. You know, you just know that when you've dropped this line, like the one of Alex Gamma where, you know, he's like, you know, but there's like the certain lines when you say them and like, oh, I've never climbed outside before, and it's just like really, really funny. But and the more you do it, you kind of get a payoff because it's kind of fun to build up, and then you just say it. But anyway, some of mine has been I've been thinking like, oh, how can I make this funny? And it isn't meant to be funny. It's just meant to be a story, and there is like an arc of the story. Basically, is that your kids get old enough that you no longer have to be there, and you can just finally in your life be free again to just go and do what you want, and how that, you know, how that is. So recently I've been like no, stop trying to make it funny, just tell the story. Just, you know, you got a story to tell, just tell it. So anyway, because I need to promote this tour, I was like, I need to get on some podcasts. And so I emailed like a few people I emailed a few people who in the past had said like, do you want to do a podcast? Now I think because I'm kind of passata non grata. Persona non grata. What is it anyway? Passata non grata. That's like the Italian red tomato sauce when you don't eat anymore. I think a lot of people won't have anything to do with me because they're. I think they always think. Like, I know Andy's okay, and he's a good guy, all that kind of stuff, and hasn't got an evil bone in his body. But other people don't know that, and if I have him on my podcast, you know, I might get. I might get like slagged off on like Reddit or something, so I can understand why people are you know, spineless. But anyway, so sometimes you know, you kind of send emails to people who you've kind of known all your life, and then you just don't get a response. Maybe they've died or something, I don't know. But you kind of get this impression that you're just not. It's like getting an email from like Tommy Robinson or some, you know, someone who is, you know, an antisocial element or something, who's dead to everybody. So anyway, but I sent this email to, I won't say who it was, but someone who's got like a climbing podcast. And I think in the past he'd said something like, it'd be great. And I've known this person all my life, basically, you know, professionally and like personally. I think he said something like, oh, it'd be great for you to have her on the podcast. And this is when he first started his podcast, and you can talk about anything, but don't talk about all your Unibomber kind of stuff. Unibomber is actually a very interesting, person. And he's a very interesting person to study, why he ended up being who he was. He's probably he's at the moment, he's like a really great person to try and understand, and about the, you know, CIA and all that kind of stuff, like shit that's not conspiracy theory is actually true and documented. Anyway, so like, maybe climbers, it'd be quite good to talk about the Unibomber because they might fucking learn something that's not just about climbing. Anyway, so I sent this email. It's like, oh, I'm doing this tour and I need to do some promotion, and it'd be great to come on your podcast at last or something. And I'm sure we could have had a really interesting conversation because he's like a funny guy, and we've done stuff. We've like been on stage together and stuff in the past, and even non tour stuff. Like I think it'd be quite interesting. The my down book thing. That's kind of an interesting thing to talk about because of like that's like going that's. That's basically how I'm making a living at the moment from that book really, and I'm getting like amazing like emails from people, so that's good. But well, emails are usually half of it is like how amazing the book is and they've learnt so much, and the other half is like all the stuff that's wrong. So anyway, but it's at least the half of it is positive, and the other stuff's positive as well. Anyway, but so I sent this email and then I just got this response back saying. It's a climbing podcast or something. I only talk to climbers, and that was like the end of the message. So, I think like later on that day, I think it was like tea time or something, and Vanessa was like what's wrong with you? What's like is something wrong? And I was like, no, there's nothing wrong, and I'm just thinking about the tour and all that kind of stuff, and blah, 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 blah. And then I brought up this email or something, and she was like, that's it, that's what's wrong, like that email. And I was like, oh no, it's just, he's probably just joking or something, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, no, that's it, that's what's wrong with you, like that, that's, it's like, there's something, you know, that's upset you or something. And there are things, like there's, I remember there was like a, there was a picture on Instagram, that if someone uses your name on Instagram, it would come up somewhere. It would show you all the people had referenced you on Instagram. And there was a picture of me, and it was basically, when did Andy Kirkpatrick become an asshole or something? And this is probably like four years ago, not 5 years ago, but it's probably in my character that little tiny things kind of niggle me they niggle me for a reason, because partly it's true, like partly I'm not a climber and partly I am an asshole, and there's part of me that gets pissed off at that person for saying that because it's not completely true, and but it is also kind of true at the same time, or like it taps into that inner like how many times I've been climbing this year, probably like three times or something. Like, does that mean I'm not a climber anymore? And you know, like, and am I an asshole? Like, yeah, probably I am a much bigger asshole than I used to be. Like, I used to be such a not an asshole. I was like, you know, just wanted to be loved, and you know, like, just be like a, you know, passive. passive, you know, just like, oh, you know, just you know, if you're gonna just do what you want to me, I don't mind, you know, I'll give you a hand or whatever. I was, you know, just a passive person, just a normie basically. Now normies get really upset if you call them a normie, but it's like that's if you, what's the opposite to not being a normie? Like a not normie? I don't know, like who wants to be a not normie? Like everyone wants to be normal, you know, what's wrong with it? So you know, so assholes are basically what's that thing? People with ponytails. Behind every ponytail, there's an asshole. Have you ever heard that? Anyways, that was Doug Scott. That was he was the first person to tell me that. Anyway, so this thing is like it's been like niggling me a little bit, and what's kind of weird is I just. All I ever think about is climbing. Like every day, I'm thinking about climbing in some, probably less than I used to because I've got other stuff to think about. But like all the stuff that's going on in the world at the moment, like that takes up part of my time. And I don't really consume that much climbing media. Like I don't read climbing books. I find like climbing websites very, very dull. I find everything to do with climbing actually pretty boring. I think it's to do with, as you get older, it's just a lot of those things just don't seem that that important anymore. And but yeah, I'm always thinking about, and part of it's to do with, like, in a way, that's kind of how I make a living, is climbing, is either writing about climbing or climbing related stuff, or you know, talking about it. And like, I'm doing like a talk for like the Mayo Clinic, which turns out it's not in Ireland, it's in America. And you know, this year I've done like quite a lot of talking to companies, like sort of top end kind of companies, which is kind of cool when it's on Zoom, because you'd have to travel there. And you know, you're basically talking about climbing to them. You're trying to translate climbing to someone who isn't a climber, and you're trying to sort of pass on the things you've learned from climbing and other climbers and stressful situations. And like, when I was talking to these army guys, basically, you know, I've had more friends and more acquaintances like die doing what I do than they have probably. Sometimes I'll get like I'll be searching for an email address, and I'll find like it'll be in like a CC, you know, on an email. And I would say like a third of the people on that email are dead, like from climbing. And, you know, that's kind of a, you know, maybe, and I was like, I've been thinking, is there some part of distancing yourself from climbing is a way of trying to distance yourself from dying and climbing? Like, subconsciously, you know, like, it's not just young climbers who die. You know, if anybody saw the film of Tom's film, BBC film, so not Tom Hargreaves, my brain's gone blank anyway, but you know what I'm talking about. You know, like, but it's like older climbers, you know, like all these old kind of time Scottish climbers, you're like, you know, they're dead as well, like avalanches and all that kind of stuff. So I wonder if there's part of it where you just like on this tour I'm doing, I'm like looking at all these trips we did, and all of them were basically pretty safe, really. There was nothing too kind of radical, as if, and I think maybe going climbing with your wife changes it a little bit. Like, you don't want to be doing anything super gnarly, because you're just terrified of something happening to them, much more so than when you're just with some random stranger you don't really care about. You know, when you can just launch up some route and you don't really care about yourself, you don't really care about them, and that's how you get it done, basically. But when you're with someone you really care about, you just, your margins of like error and your stops, your safety stops are just set differently. I guess it's a different game though, because I would say this person who said I wasn't a climber is like, climbing's very broad. Like, I would say I'm interested in having interesting times, really, and climbing is one of the easiest ways to do that. You know, you don't really need a huge investment. Like, if you only go scuba diving or skydiving or even skiing, it requires a larger investment in time and money, and gear and stuff. But with climbing, you can get on a bus and go to the Alps, and you can, you know, get by on not a lot and have like amazing adventures and stuff. And so I think for me, like, that was, climbing was always like the quickest route to having like interesting adventures. And like, now I'd really like to sail around the world, I'd really like to row across the Atlantic and all that kind of stuff. It all requires too much money, really. And it's just I have like fantasies about, I'll have to build a boat or something, but I'll never get around to it, because climbing is so much easier. You know, so it might take you, you know, it might take you like a year to build your own boat, but it only takes you like an hour to pack your bag to go climbing. So, so I was like, it's a real problem. It's a real problem if you're like hypersensitive about things, that when people say things, you take it. It really wounds you. I don't think everyone's the same. I'm not expressing like, oh, I've got this problem and I'm very sensitive, but it is kind of, I think it's probably in your nature. It's like the yin to the yang of yin. Anyway, it's the flip side. Like if you're a creative person, is you spend a lot of time thinking about everything and trying to analyze everything, and you know, you can write, that's why you can write a massive book about abseiling, like 300,000 words about abseiling, because you really thought very deeply about it, and you've like identified really small details that are actually very important. And it's the same if you're writing like creative writing, is you can identify very small details in someone's character, or the way someone says something, or the way someone doesn't say something, that is kind of quite powerful. And a lot of people can just kind of miss that kind of thing. But it does make you like more like, it's not as easy if you just like, oh, that guy's an asshole. What does he mean? And you know, and I guess my normal response in the past would be to like attack that person back. And in some regards, this is an attack back to him, but it's a more positive way. It probably won't listen to this anyway. But in another way, like a lot of the humor you use in your life is basically getting the boot in before anybody else does, you know, that you're attacking everybody else, but you're so vulnerable, you can't even take, and it's like a battleship with these like massive guns on it, but the hull of the battleship's like, you know, 5 millimeters thick or something. Can't take any hits whatsoever. But all these things, like if you do have a weakness or a flaw and someone highlights them, it should always be an opportunity to think about them, to be like, am I a climber? What is a climber? Like, I just watched that video on YouTube, and it's of Joe Brown, Hamish McInnes, Don Willans, Mo Antoine, climbing in Guyana on the big sort of limestone TPP, or what they're called, big escarpments. You know, it must be, I think it's from the 1970 something, because the guy who was the narrator died. I was like Googling him, 'cause I didn't know who he was. He was like an actor who died of like a brain hemorrhage or something, like not long after coming back from that trip. So anyway, so was that's the trip they kind of cover in Feeding the Rat, Al Alvarez's book. But anyway, so when I was watching that film, I was thinking, like, basically, apart from Mo Antoine, they all look like a bunch of, like, they could be like bricklayers or something, or maybe like a golfing trip gone awry. Like, they just look, you know, Don Willans is like, looks really fat and really out of his, you know, out of his place. And Joe Brown just, you know, he just looks like he's a scaffolder or something. And like Mo Antoine is the only one who really looks the part of, you know, kind of a, you know, climber, modern sort of climber. But they're just basically like aiding their way, like with pegs and stuff up this thing. So I was thinking, like, are they climbers, those guys? Like Joe Brown, you know, what would he be climbing? Like E3? You know, if he was around now, he'd just be climbing E3. Don Willans, you know, like if he was still around now, yeah, he climbed, you know, was it the south face of Annapurna, and he, you know, Towers of Pain and all these kind of stuff. But, you know, would he still be a climber? You know, technically, is he a climber? Hamish McInnes, You know, he was probably, you know, he was probably a busy guy. He was doing lots of, you know, mountain rescue stuff and writing books and stuff like that. Like going hill walking. Was he a climber? Like, what do you have to be a climber? Like, I started climbing when I was, like, you know, 4 or 5 years old, and have been doing it, and I'm now 50 years old, and that's kind of been my life, basically. It's like, is going away climbing, and you know, I think I would say, like, I've put in far more into climbing than I ever got out, especially in terms of like time invested in climbing and then not having the you know, the return of getting to the top of stuff, but also in terms of communicating in an interesting way my view of climbing. Like, I don't think I've ever tried to say I was like good at climbing or an amazing climber. Like, I would say I was probably a below average climber when it comes to sort of rock climbing. And I've also just not ever dedicated, you know, as much time in, you know, like, to being away from home and doing, you know, like back-to-back trips and all that kind of stuff, which is probably why I'm still alive. So I've always, my relationship with climbing has always been very, it's a bit like my relationship with like vegetables, basically. You know, it's it's like fleeting and complex. So yeah, so it's, you know, if someone wanted to talk to me about climbing, would I have nothing to say? I guess that's the thing. But I think on a different level, I guess that comment, which could just be a joke, is climbing is basically a performance, isn't it? And it's either a personal performance. Like, you know, like people who play the guitar, like, they love fucking playing the guitar when there's someone else there, don't they? Like, I'll just get my guitar out and I'll just get my amp on. It's like, oh, Christ almighty. It's like people who play the drums, you know, play like bongos or something. They always have to go and do it where people can see them. Now, I'm sure there's people who play the guitar at home and they never, you know, but people who sing at home and do all sorts of stuff at home. But really, it's like it's a performance. And people are better at it when they're being watched or whatever. So for some people, like, I think climbing is like an act of performance. And ideally, they would like to have it documented and recorded. They like someone to take photographs of it or film it or, you know, talk about it afterwards or whatever. And I think the act of performance is tapping into something which is a very deep... it's the same as acting, basically. It's a very deep sort of part of your psyche that to be seen and to be, you know, to be idolized in a way. Like, you know, to be the one who can do like a one-arm pull-up. Like, doing one-arm pull-ups and no one knows you can do it, what's the point? But you want to be in the prison yard and you're just like cranking out 10 one-arm pull-ups. But it's... in a way, like my life as a climber has been an act of performance in a way, because it was, although I kind of enjoyed it, it was generally as a stage, is you go out there on the stage and you'd always try to do something, you know, you'd always try and you'd make it an epic, or you'd just pick the routes, you know, that were guaranteed to be noteworthy, or, you know, or whatever. And I suppose like a lot of climbers might be the same, as they, you know, they get to a point where they want to be doing like the hardest rock routes or the hardest boulder problems. And part of it is that they want to challenge themselves. Like, you have this idea that climbing might be like a combat sport, but instead of fighting and your adversary being another person, in a way your adversary is yourself. If that makes any sense. That's that I had this idea from listening to this Alex Friedman's podcast about judo, but you know, you, in a way, like the rock or the ice or the mountain is like the canvas or the mat, and you're fighting yourself up there, really. But you kind of know all the moves. That's the you know, you don't want to. But I guess there's a lot of tapping out or broken bones. I don't know where I'm going with this now, because I wouldn't really ever. But yeah, so ultimately, I think ultimately it really made me this one little comment. It really made me think about what is a climber, and am I a climber? And like, if I'm not a climber, I don't know what I am. You know, I must have spent most of my life pretending to be a climber, which could be true. I'm not saying that's not true. You're like, maybe you're imitating being a climber or trying to, you know, if you really were a climber, you'd just be climbing all the time, and that's your whole life. Everything in your life would be secondary to that. Your relationships, your kids, your work. You'd just basically be an asshole, basically. Like a fucking climbing asshole. And do you want to be a climber like that? You know, I might be an asshole and I might be a climber, but I'm not a climbing asshole. That's basically the thing. Like for me, I never wanted to be that person. And I've seen, you know, you work in a climbing shop and you meet a lot of really amazing climbers. And I wanted to be obsessive, and I wanted to be, commit everything to climbing, but I didn't want to do it all the time, because I think I had this experience of meeting some very, very old climbers who were basically, their bodies were fucked, all the relationships in their lives were fucked. They basically had no money, no pension, no job, no career, no family, nothing apart from all these interactions with bits of rock all over the place. And it worked out, you know, to be that obsessed about anything. Now, ideally, you just die, you know, you eventually just keep doing it until you drop down dead. But I think I always had that. I think I always probably wanted to keep my hand in the real world, is I did want to have a relationship with other human beings who weren't just climbers. And I did want to read books that weren't just about climbing. I did want to go on holiday. It wasn't just about climbing. And, you know, I know people who are such extremists that they wouldn't even talk to people who weren't climbers. Like, they literally had nothing to say. You know, they would probably see some non-climbers as like civilians or something. But for me, I never wanted to be like that, because if you're like judgmental and looking down your noses at everyone you meet, you're just a fucking asshole, basically. You know, if it's all about, oh, I don't talk to that person. Like, there's a great story about Johnny Dawes, who's at some film festival somewhere, and he was talking about fear. He was like, has anybody here like ever felt like real fear? You know, like really real fear, like you're going to die. And, you know, one move, just blow this one move, you're going to die. Anyone had that experience here? And this guy put his hand up. Yeah, I've felt like that. And Johnny comes over to him with his microphone. He goes like, do you want to tell us about it? And he goes like, oh, well, I was on this V-diff. And he goes, oh, shut up, you don't know what you're talking about. But you know, but if you're always judging everyone you meet by, oh, what grade do you climb, you know, like someone's, you know, a climb E1 or something, and it's just not good, really, because you will meet people who've never climbed anything in their lives and they're fucking amazing, you know. Like, maybe I've told this story on this podcast, but I was sitting outside the coffee shop. And there was this old woman there, and she had like a transistor radio, old fashioned, a tranny, as we used to call it. You can't call them trannies anymore. And she had it up to her ear, And it was a bit annoying, you know, because you could kind of hear it, you know. And I was like, God, why don't you get yourself some bloody iPod or something? You know, get with the 21st century, don't make iPods anymore. And anyway, so I was like, oh, what are you listening to? As in, turn it off. And she said, oh, I'm listening to the radio, listening to a tranny. Anyway, so I started talking to her. And turned out she was like 90 years old or something. She was like pretty old. And because of like lockdown, like you could tell she was kind of a little bit isolated and was just, basically she was going to this coffee shop and sitting outside because you couldn't go into it like every day. And she did like a walk and she would come and sit outside this coffee shop. She was still like fit and everything else, but she was like very, very kind of elderly. So I started having a talk to her, and I was like, what was it like growing up in Ireland? You know, and she was like, oh, it was like, she was telling that like she used to cycle to school in the winter and she had no gloves and she used to like hold the handlebars like one hand at a time and all this, you know. And I was talking about this stuff and I was like, what about the church, the Catholic Church? And she was like, oh, it's like terrible, and you know, like religion, it's all, you know, it's all crap and all that kind of stuff. And I said, then what did you do, you know, when you left school? She said, oh, I was a nun. And she still was a nun. She used to be this like 90-year-old nun. I don't think I ever retired from being a nun. But just had this like amazing conversation with this person with so much like, you know, like humanity and stuff that really opened your mind to like stuff you never, like I have all the time in the world for the Catholic Church. I have all the time in the world for Islam. I have all the time in the world for like atheism and anti-theism and all this kind of stuff, because all of it's kind of interesting. But if I just said to that woman like, oh, what grade do you climb? And she said like, what's a grade? You know, I'd be like, oh, I'm not talking to that person. you know, if they had like the wrong kind of, if they had like a massive chalk bag, or they just had like really crap rock boots, and they'd be like, oh God, I'm not talking to that person. They've got like, look at that. Oh God. God, my God, they've got the chalk bag clipped onto their harness. Oh my God, what an idiot. Anyway, so I think, although I would say I have had like a life of extreme climbing, I never wanted to be an extreme climber. I'd rather be like a hitman, you know, who just has his ordinary life, and then he gets an envelope through the door or something, or there's some, you know, and he opens it and there's like a picture of someone you have to go and kill. Except for me, it was like a picture of a mountain. And I kind of quite liked that. I quite liked that kind of superhero kind of lifestyle of just being an ordinary person, interested in ordinary things, and never getting, you know, if you're a hitman, you don't want to be reading books about killing people all the time and getting magazines about how to kill people and go to websites about how to kill people. It's just, you know, it's what, you know, you just want to, you know, fill your mind with other things really. And just when it comes to the killing, just get it over with. So yes, I am a climber. I have decided, and I am an asshole as well. But I think there's room for assholes, you know, at least there's at least some room for an asshole in this world. You know, where would we be without assholes? Be full of shit, wouldn't we? So I hope this little podcast didn't sound too rambling, because it was. I wasn't trying to get back at this person. It did genuinely kind of, I wouldn't say upset me, but it made me think about stuff like that, and it made me think I need to just to prove to myself I need to, like, it's not easy to go climbing here because it's like raining all the time, so maybe I need to, you know, make some adjustments to my life to go climbing more or something. Or, you know, it's not easy when you got a baby. Anyway, I'm just making loads of excuses up now because I fucking hate climbing. Anyway, check out that video of Mo Antoine, and I'll put a link in the notes for this podcast. It's a really cool little film from the days before climbing got so off its own arse, basically. And yeah, they were Maybe you need to go for that old, you know, that thing about if you're like interviewing someone. I think it's some Norwegian soldier guy told me, like, if you're interviewing someone to be in your special forces thing, you need to ask yourself, could I spend a month in a snow hole with this person? And I think maybe that applies to climbers as well. I'm sure it'd be like good fun hanging out with Don Willens and Mo Antoine and all those people. Less so maybe with someone who's like on the Olympic climbing team, but that's probably unfair. I'm sure it'd be good fun. Although they'd just be talking about their tendons and their, you know, campusing and all that kind of stuff. But I'm sure that's not true. Anyway, so hopefully the next podcast to do, I'll actually be talking to another human being and talking nonstop for like 4 hours. But until then, be safe, you climbers.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.